Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today a true accounting legend. It's Wayne Schmidt. Hello, sir.
Hello, and thank you, Rob. Great to be on the show. Legend, I'm not too sure about that. In my mind, maybe.
We'll see in the next 30 minutes, Wayne, and we'll let the audience decide. So listen, there may be some people listening that may not have come across you. Just tell us a bit about your history in the game and what you're doing now.
30 years working with accountants.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's a bit sad, really, almost. I'm originally a computer programmer back in mainframe days, and my first role was working for a company called Norwich Life. Worked there for about 5 years writing financial planning software, and that got me into working with accountants. I decided to leave there and set up my own bookkeeping business. Grew that business to about 20 staff. This is in Melbourne and Sydney. Sold that, went to work for a company called Reckon, which was the distributor of QuickBooks in Australia. Worked there for a couple of years. Got poached by another company called MYB. MYB in Australia at that stage was the largest software vendor. So I headed up sales for MYB and worked at MYB for 7 years. Ended up in the UK. I'm heading up MYB UK. Came back to Australia, saw this little software company called Xero coming out of New Zealand, and it wasn't in Australia at that stage. Got to launch Xero in Australia back in October 2009 and worked there for nearly 5 years. And now I'm actually out traveling the world as a digital nomad and doing some work for non-profits and just a bit of mentoring as well. So that's me now.
What did you see back then in Xero, Wayne, that got you interested in that journey?
Oh, good question. You've got to remember, I was trained classically on mainframes, and my first programming was programming on the first IBM PC that arrived in Australia. Everybody said I'd ruined my career because I'd gone to personal computers when mainframes were the gig, and I like change. So I saw that change. Same with accounting software when I started selling accounting software to accountants and practice management. No one liked doing it. It was a hard thing. I chose that. I can still remember working at MYB, and we were looking at Xero constantly, and everybody's going, it's never going to take off. Cloud's not take off. No one's put their data online. And I kept going, I'm pretty sure it's got some legs. I actually think this is going to be a goer.
What a visionary you were.
I really did. And I chased it. Oh, the world's longest interview process. I got interviewed by everybody, including the janitor. It was like 3 months of interview process, especially because I'm the only person that's ever worked with all three major vendors, Intuit, MYB, and Xero. So I like being a challenger, and I love startups. Startups, so much more fun. Mm.
There's a great podcast called Business Wars, and it talks about the major wars between people at McDonald's and Burger King, or Fender and Gibson, or Adidas and Nike. And I'm just paint a picture, would you, of the battle between these three major providers you're talking about, because you've got a unique insight into that.
The battle. Well, let's talk about the battle in Australia initially. There was no battle. The only battle we had was, it was MYB and Reckon. And in those days, MYB had about 60% market share. Sometimes it went up to 65%. And then 20 to 25% was Intuit. And then the rest were things like Attaché and a product like that. So when Xero came to the marketplace, we launched it on our kitchen table in Richmond. My employee number two was Sally, and she didn't even get paid the first 3 months or 4 months. She just did it for the love. And so we had no marketing budget. We had a company name that no one could spell. It's called Xero, like with an X. And I'm like, I'm going, no, it's with an X, not a Z. No, it's not Xerox. No marketing budget. You're trying to go against MYB, who did a massive campaign to disrupt cloud. Like, cloud's not secure. Why would you ever do that? They threw every punch they could at us. So we were constantly being beaten down. And a follow-up question is, how did we then end up becoming number one? It was a really interesting thing. Two things. And Tim Greed would still agree this was possibly one of the worst things that MYB's marketing could do. They did a survey to every accountant in Australia saying, have you heard of these products?
Right.
And they listed Xero. Thank you so much. The free kick of my life. If they hadn't done that, I probably would have been still another 6 months behind, because that at least got people knowing of the word Xero and go, oh, there's a competitor. So you got to go back 2009, you know, the iPhone had just come to Australia, really. So social media, Twitter had just just kind of like being sardid. It was still kind of like cool and not nasty. And so what we decided to do was let's leverage social selling. And I didn't even know it was called social selling in those days. I'd been a big fan of LinkedIn and Facebook. And then we got onto Twitter. So we leveraged the hell out of social media. That was the thing that we could use for free. And the big boys in town didn't do it because, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you've got 1,000 or 1,500 staff, multiple layers just to do a tweet. Whereas I had the benefit of being trained by a social media manager at Xero called Orange Girl, Catherine Walker, one of the original seven. So there's an original seven people that founded Xero, and Catherine is one of them and still works there, which is great. Three of the original seven still work actually at Xero, which is very unusual.
So you were young, nimble, agile. You could do anything you wanted.
Yeah, I just would do it and then pray for forgiveness afterwards.
Yeah.
That's an approach that worked quite well. She taught me three good things, which was, can you say it to your mum? Would you say it to your mum? And would you upset your mum if you did say it? And with those three things, we grafted my knowledge because we were learning, you know, my first tweet, just I think hello. We had a strict rule. So we would never mention our competition. So we never mentioned MIB or Reckon or any of those. We never even looked at what they did marketing-wise. We made sure that we just ran our own race. And so our race was very much go out and run events. So I would go and visit something like 60 cities in 30 days. So I'd do two cities a day, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And so I'd go in there with my little banner. And because we only could afford one banner, not two, a car and a projector. And I'd go in there. And if we got more than 10 people in the room, 10 accountants, I would do a happy dance. Most of the time, I would be doing it to three or four people.
Those were the early days. When, bring us forward now, Xero conquered New Zealand, Australia, set their sights a little bit further now. Where would you rank them now and what's the battle like?
Okay, interesting. We had three steps in our sales process, just three words. Recruit, educate, grow. So what we had to do was recruit accounting firms, then educate them on how to position Xero and educate them on the product, and then grow them. So get them to get their clients onto Xero. That was it. Recruit, educate, grow. And so anything we did every day, if it wasn't one of those steps, we would stop it. So I'd walk to someone and say, what are you doing today? Which step? And if it was marketing was doing something else, I'm going, if it's not part of recruit, educate, or grow, stop it. That filter still applies to Xero. I'm pretty sure they haven't changed it. It was a consistent filter. That's why Australia, New Zealand grew the fastest. I was surprised to say the UK. UK never grew quickly. Both started at exactly the same time. UK has a bigger market share. Launching Xero Australia, we were given set targets. Every time I got X amount of sales, I could get a new salesperson. But, you know, we weren't allowed to get a salesperson until we got the sales. Like, so, you know, we didn't get, hey, here, go and hire 100 staff. It was, you've got four. And when you get to this revenue, so once you get to $1 million, I'll give you one more. Once you get 2 million, I'll give you another one. Whereas they didn't kind of like have that fight and they didn't follow the recruit, educate, grow strategy. They're now reverting back to following the New Zealand, Australia process. The UK process is exactly the same, yeah.
Well, the battle is ongoing, isn't it?
I actually think they've lost America.
Right.
I don't think they could ever win America now. They could be a strong number three, maybe a weak number two. If you just look at the growth rate of QBO in America, you just can't catch them. It's just mass now. They should have gone in with the New Zealand team originally and just said, that's it. Everyone's New Zealand and you're going to do it our way. Not, oh no, it's different in America.
So what's Xero's end game now, do you think, Wayne?
They've done a switch and they've moved to Asia, which is fantastic. People just forget about Asia sometimes and you don't realize the size of the market and the numbers. So Asia, they're doing really well. They've managed to knock Intuit out. Like Intuit has retreated from Asia. Mm. I would say that it was a bad call by Intuit. They shouldn't have done that. No matter what, I would have doubled down. Now they're unchallenged in Asia and they're doing a fantastic job there. Opportunities are in India as well. I need to do some stuff in South Africa. Canada's doing really well. They've done great in Canada. If I would have tackled America, I would have done Canada first. Mm. Such a logical step.
You haven't mentioned Surge. Where are they in the fight, Wayne, in your eyes?
Yeah, that's because I haven't mentioned them. I know them really well. I've spoken at their conference. I've spoken at everybody's conference. One of the things that has kind of gone, which is a thing I never promoted, was this, hey, you've got to be 100% Xero. I never said that, never said it on stage, because I always wanted it to be best of breed. One of the problems when you have 100% is you can end up maybe becoming like MYB. If you become 100%, then you can then just keep doing what MYB did, which was raise the price every year and you've got some clients. I like competition. Competition's good for everybody. So getting back to your question on sales, stage. I've seen that they've finally done an acquisition, which is good. They picked a bad route with Salesforce. I just sat there and went, why? And I can still remember the guy that managed Sage in Australia sitting in a conference going, we interviewed everybody and they said that they're just quite happy with desktop. Yeah, I know. If you're interviewing your client, it's like interviewing people back when you had, before the car was invented. What did you want? You just wanted a six-legged horse.
Yeah.
Car didn't come into the conversation. So if they do some more smart acquisitions, they could leapfrog.
Sure. What kind of shape do you feel the accounting profession's in at the moment, generally across the world, Wayne?
Oh, it's the same. Mate, to be honest, it hasn't changed in 30 years.
There's a lot of talk about change, isn't there?
God, there's a couple things. Here's my reasoning, and it's just my reasoning. Most partners are in their 50s in accounting firms, which means they're baby boomer generation. Now, you've got to remember, baby boomer generation, like myself, our parents could never dream of earning a six-figure salary. For us, we got into a six-figure salary, and so we're quite happy to make 120,000, 150,000. We're happy. And so accounting firms, partners are quite happy earning that. That's the way they go on. If there's been changes in the tools they use, fundamentally, they're compliance driven and it's a great system. You know, in Australia, we're really lucky. Government touches our superannuation every year. America is really compliance driven. Most countries are compliance driven. Now, I sit there and I laugh. I constantly laugh at this whole business advisory. I just created the first sales course for accountants because I went, no one's teaching an accountant how to sell. No one. The first time they go and do a business advisory meeting, they're going to get a price objection and they're just going to crumble like cards. So business advisory, will it occur eventually 30 years from now? Compliance is going to be around for a long time. So for those accountants that are doing clients, I don't begrudge you. It's a good revenue earner. You can make compliance really profitable. I would offshore your team, especially in the UK. I don't know why the UK doesn't offshore more. There's some great companies out there. So the difference between offshoring and outsourcing is offshoring means you have a team. The team is just remote and it's your team, your staff. Outsourcing is where it's job-based. You give a job and you don't know who's going to do that work. It just comes back. That's the difference. Offshoring is really good. And I don't know why people sometimes get all hissy about it because I sit there going, so if I'm an accounting firm in Australia and I've got three offices and one of those offices happens to be in Adelaide where everything's cheap, isn't that offshoring in the same terminology? You know, you're taking jobs out of Melbourne. Why are you doing that? You should keep them all in Melbourne. No, because it's cheaper to have. You know, some of the big firms moved to Adelaide. Like the big four have been doing it for years, kids. Okay? If you're a sole partner in an accounting firm, start looking at the word offshoring and look at the offshore firm. There's some good ones. TOA is a really good one. They're huge now. They've got 1,500 staff that are offshored. You know, these are big accounting firms and small accounting firms with one partner having a lot of their team running remotely.
So I'm detecting a healthy cynicism of the accounting profession's ability to change quickly and adapt to the rate at which technology is changing. What do you think the good firms are doing great these days?
So they tend to be younger. You know, they've got a hipster beard, which I'm never going to grow. You know, the ones I really love, I like watching, is those that are niche. If you want to grow rapidly, that's the best place. Because, you know, I hate it every time I see an accounting firm. They go, so what type of clients do you have? You know, SMEs, what, all 2.2 million of them are in Australia. Like, how are you going to market to them? Get a shotgun, fire it out, and hopefully hit somebody that's still alive. Mm. Now, the way to explain it to an accountant is, okay, you're like doctors. You can either be a doctor or you can be a specialist. Go to a doctor and you get the same. They have to do a fixed fee. It's a small amount and that's it because you're a generalist. Or you can be a specialist and they just earn at least 10 times more than a doctor. And that just tends to be the way because they specialize in either, you know, anything. But, you know, I've seen specialist doctors. And that's the way I explain it. Most accounting firms, the compliance space, they couldn't handle fast growth. Mm. It's the new one, like the really new one. I'm doing some mentoring for some firms now. There's one, she started with herself and she has just grown so fast. Her revenue per partner, which is just herself, is what most partners would achieve in 10 years' time. She's done it in one because she's worked out of her niche and it's really narrow and it's a very high net worth niche. It's high fee and she's been able to then become like a thought leader in that industry.
Mm. What's the niche, Wayne?
Medical practices. So not doctors, it's actual medical practices because if you own a medical practice, that means it's most likely have two or three, you're going to have doctors underneath that. So you're going to get all the doctor work underneath that, but you're going for the practice. So that means her website doesn't say the word business. It says medical practice. So don't get me wrong. Accounting firms, they pick up technology. I just don't think they're changing they don't have to change. Like, compliance is a really good earner. It's like, if it was me, can we get your costs down? So start offshoring, start picking out who you want to have as new clients, get really narrow focused. That doesn't mean you throw away your old clients. You know, I chat to established firms. They've been running for 50 years. They go, okay, let's start niching now. Yeah. I've got one who's niching in the travel industry. He really loves the travel industry. I think it's also because he gets to do a lot of trips now. He gets to niche in an industry he loves working with. But that's not saying he's throwing away, and it's not throwing 50 years worth of history out of that accounting firm. And it's just saying that this is the new type of client. Mm. They have to fit me.
Is there anything you believe deeply, Wayne, that other people think is crazy? Because you're not short of an opinion, are you?
Oh, no. One of the things I think it's crazy is accounting firms, partners being salespeople. Like, for God's sake, they've never done any sales training. You end up stumbling in and setting up an accounting firm, or you worked in an accounting firm and you bought into it. Crazy people do. But they don't do any formal training on sales. And yet they're supposed to be the hunters in the firm, you know. They're supposed to be, you know, winning all this new business. They're in charge of new business. So one of the things I do is I mentor all my clients on how to be a salesperson. And I've done it, dumbed down the sales cycle so that now I can get any partner and push them through and go, bang, you're a salesperson at the end of it.
And what's the essence of your approach?
To me, sales is just a process. So if you say it's all about relationships, well, A, you're going to die before you have a relationship because it's going to take too long to have a relationship, especially as an accountant. It's not word of mouth. So there's a big difference between word of mouth and referrals. Word of mouth and referrals are two different things. So word of mouth is three people at a barbecue and you're not there and they go, do you know a good accountant? And somebody says something about you. But the problem is they might position you wrong and they really don't position you exactly what you do. Whereas referrals is a process. So one of the things I love is I train all my accountants to set up a referral process. And the referral process is every time you see a client, you ask them, do you know anybody who needs or wants my services? Simple as that. And then you go, if they say yes, you ask for the person's details and then you reach out and you say, look, client XYZ, just mentioned that you're looking for an accountant, I'll have a chat to you. I love referrals and having a referral process compared to word of mouth. Every accountant will say I deal on word of mouth. I don't know why accountants don't have sales targets and sales budgets. So the first thing I do with everybody is go, you're going to have a sales budget and I run it as a sales team. So I use products like Pipedrive. I love Pipedrive.
Yep.
So that's the sales product. It's a really good, easy, like super, super easy. You know, it's not Salesforce. It's drag and drop. Now you set your percentages up on with your probability of getting a client. So I set them up with a process on how you engage with a suspect and a lead and go through the steps. And I've got a set process. And then how to run a discovery meeting, because accountants don't run discovery meetings. So discovery meetings are what I call business advisory, kind of.
Right.
You know, a discovery meeting for me, the client will feel so punch drunk on questions. I will ask them and ask them and ask them. And you don't give them a solution. You just sit there and you just right away and you ask them lots of questions. They're going to love you because you're the first accountant that's ever asked them a question and really got to know their business, like really probing. When was the last time you reviewed your pricing? What's their exit strategy? All those types of things that you normally might not do in a discovery meeting. You tend to just do the client questions like, hey, you want this set of annual account done? You might need GST or VAT recording. And then might need some bookkeeping. I've got about 30 questions they would normally go through and that will get them really good, that deep understanding. But here's something for your listeners. How many times do you get somebody from Xero or Sage or Intuit again, ringing you up and saying, hi, tell me a little bit about your accounting firm? You go, my God, it's on my website. It's lazy sales. It's really lazy. Like one of the things I teach accountants is to do the research. One of the things I taught my sales team at Xero was you were never going to phone up that client and say, tell me about your firm. You should know more about that firm than they almost know about themselves. You can find it from their website. So if you're going to try moving into business advisory, you need to learn sales.
Yeah. Is it your view that every accountant can sell?
I've decided everybody can sell. I've done this sales course for chiropractors in Singapore. I actually did the same spiel as what I do for accountants. And everybody sells. Last time you went for an interview, last time you dated somebody. Everybody is a salesperson.
Wayne, I've got to ask you about legacy as we draw to a close. What's your definition of the term and how are you living that out now? What are people going to say about Wayne Schmidt when you're gone?
It's interesting because that's what I'm trying to do right now is leave a legacy. I've been working a lot with B1G1. Business for Good, which was set up by Paul Dunn and Masami Sato. And I work closely with them. So part of my legacy is giving back. So,
and is that your definition, simply giving back?
Oh, well, giving back to have an impact. So, you know, we don't have children. So what we do is follow fundamentally the UN's 14 sustainable goals.
Yeah.
And so what we do is try to build what we call giving into our business model. So I still do coaching. So what I do is I give a percentage of what I earn away via B1G1. And what I love about that is for every dollar I give away, I know that dollar goes through. Because you've got to understand, say if you give a dollar to World Vision, well, it's about 25 cents that will get to the actual person.
Yeah.
Most of it taken with overhead. B1G1 vets all the worthy causes, and it's really good. So a dollar in Cambodia goes such a long way. We've lived in Cambodia, you know, because we've been traveling in Asia. We've gone to so many charities, and like some of them, I can still remember going to This Life Cambodia and going into their office. They had to bring me a towel because their office wasn't air conditioned. I was sweating so much, and that's just their normal office. So my legacy now, because I've worked with a number of non-profits now, is trying to get a connection between non-profits and the person doing the giving to the person doing the receiving. So I've launched a new website called socialforgood.org. And what it is training NGOs on how to use social media to get a better connection. The reason why I'm talking about this to accountants is every NGO or nonprofit has to have an accountant, has to be audited. So accountants have got a good, great way of getting the message out. So I'm practicing what I preach. And the good thing is, if there's something I hope is my legacy, but people will say, wow, you've just, you know, connected so many people with the end recipient and use my social media and social selling.
Wayne, what do you feel is coming up for the accounting world over the next few years? Crystal ball time.
Ooh, good one. So in Australia, a lot more consolidation, and I can see that happening more and more. So there'll be a consolidation, not so many firms. Being the firms that do open will be one of your staff members, your senior accountant, nicking off and setting up their own firm.
You see more venture capital money coming into accounting firms and the apps, the software?
Apps, yes, definitely. Accounting firms, no, they've all done that and burnt themselves. So there's been, well, that's happened in Australia. All of them failed. So I don't think they'll go buying accounting firms again, not for a long time. But for the accounting firm themselves, the only thing that could potentially hurt them is the automation of bookkeeping. If I was an accounting firm, one thing I would do is bring back bookkeeping. Why accounting firms have let the bookkeeping go away? Bookkeepers make more money out of your client than you do. Say your average fees for a client are about £2,500. The bookkeeper's charging at least £5,000, £7,500. To me, I would bring that into your practice and simply offshore your bookkeeping team. It brings you in an additional service, and it's something that's it's easy for your firm. But one of the things I've always sat there, and I've been amazed, if I was a partner in a firm, you know, the average firm has normally 150 businesses per partner. That equation normally works globally to make your standard median revenue. So you've got 150 different clients, but the problem is between you and that client's yours, is a bookkeeper. But that bookkeeper, Betty, might do it her way. And so you end up with 150 different files coming in with the charts all different, and they're all done their way, you know, and it's just hard and causes friction with your client. Bring it back in-house. It's easy. You know how to do it. The reason why you let it go was it wasn't profitable.
Yeah.
Now, because of cloud accounting, you've got no data file movement. So that's disappeared, that friction. So the friction's gone. And because of the ability to offshore, you can now get a cheap labor force. Like, now you go to the Philippines, these guys are also qualified CPAs. They come to Australia, get a CPA, and then go back and become a bookkeeper. You're going, you can't get them at that price point.
Wayne, this has been terrific. If people want to find out more about you and tap into some of the great things you're doing, what's a good way for them to reach you?
Oh, reach me. Just type in Wayne Space Schmidt and I should just come up on the internet nearly anywhere now.
You should and you do.
Now, you will find a US senator. He's got my domain name. So my domain name is wayne-schmidt.com. At some stage, he'll lose being a US senator. But, you know, we have a good nudge. We both come up on the first page.
Wayne, this has been terrific. Would you leave the accounting people and the software people listening with a bit of encouragement, a bit of advice for negotiating these turbulent waters of change in the accounting world?
Best thing I suggest is go to all the conferences. The conferences are great. Conferences like AccountX, and go to as many conferences as you can and get the staff to go and maybe get them to write a report. Here's one great thing. How about you get a team member to present every month the latest product? Go and research a product. Go and research Practice Ignition or Spotlight Reporting or Fathom or Futrely, and get it to be one of your junior staff members, because they're going to love it. Builds them up and train the team. And for the app vendors, just remember, the poor old accountants are drowning out there. If I was a partner, I don't know how you handle the amount of emails. So you've got to think, there's 1,000 add-on apps now.
Wow.
And there's all the big vendors as as well. So even if they all just do one email, you're getting bombarded, just one email a year. The amount of emails, unless you're really providing education instead of trying to use the accountants as a route to market. One of the things I always chat to app vendors now is, are you using the accountants as a route to market? So you're just using them to sell your product. Well, that's going to be tough because those poor accountants are just getting flooded. So I feel for you at the moment, trying to learn all the apps. Accounting firms, if they've got their clients on the cloud, they go, yep, we're a cloud accounting firm. And the first thing I do is I walk in, I see a dirty old Exchange server sitting in the corner. And I go, no, you're not. So you don't even think about practice management. Just get your email client onto the cloud. And then you can start maybe looking at things like corporate clients, you know, company registration. And then you can start moving down the chain. Changing your practice management is like doing a heart transplant. And they do that first. I go, oh my God, no. You know, start using all the things like Zoom for meetings, Loom for recording your onboarding of new staff. Loom is the best product out. Calendly for your calendar appointments. Grammarly so that you don't write emails that have got poor grammar. Don't worry about your practice management solution. Just get onto those because that gives you a taste of moving to the cloud without doing a heart transplant. So get your email into the cloud, then start looking at corporate compliance, then start looking at things like Loom, Zoom, Calendly, and move that part so you start getting efficiency. Now, all that is going to give you an immediate efficiency, and that will help your bottom line because straight away you're not paying for services. Then you might look at your practice management, but practice management should be a year down the track after you've got everything else is online, and that's the last step of the process. I think we haven't moved that needle enough, and that's a fault of our industry as the software vendors. We've kind of like gone, well, get all your clients onto Xero or QBO, and we've shoved a pile of apps down your throat and you've got indigestion and no one's going to take it back a step. And let's get to basics. No one's broken down into real basics. The problem is for the software vendors, none of those steps make you money. But for an accounting firm, that saves you a bucket load of management fees in maintaining your servers. So there's an immediate benefit.
Well, Wayne Schmidt, thanks so much for blessing us with some time today and coming out of semi-retirement to join us on the podcast.
Oh, I want to thank you so much. And seriously, Rob, because I reached out to you. And so first of all, because for the audience, listen, I reached out to him and I said, look, I'd love to be on your show. And he was really warm and said, come on, which is great. We did no prep work with this. We didn't do questions and answers or anything. So thank you so much. And
I'll never tell.
I love what you're doing. Yeah, I love what you're doing. Thanks so much, mate.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.